Hello, everyone, and welcome to Culturally Relevant, a podcast about film, television, art, and culture. I'm David Chen, and today is another bonus diary episode. Thought it'd be good to check in, do another pandemic diary about what's happening in the world, what's happening with the pandemic, what's happening in society, what's happening in Seattle. So joining me for this update, she is somebody who has been a frequent companion with me on these diary episodes. At Joy of Napping, how's it going, Joy?
It is going. It proceeds.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, typically on this podcast, as I mentioned, we talk about movies, TV, art, culture. But I've also been doing these pandemic diaries for the course of the last 15 months or so, just to kind of check in with folks. And I've actually gotten overall pretty good feedback. You know, first of all, a shocking number of people I know actually listen to this. From my understanding.
It's been interesting as we've reemerged IRL.
As we've reemerged from the chrysalis that we've been in, that many people have said, oh, I listened to the Culturally Relevant Diary episodes and it makes me feel like I know what's going on with your life. And it's always a pleasant surprise when I hear that.
Our actual friends, you mean?
Yes.
It's interesting you said a chrysalis.
I also hear from people who listen to this show who are not our friends in real life and who have been grateful to for these episodes for like, allowing them to feel like there's somebody out there who feels the same way as they do about things. So that's kind of the function of what these bonus episodes are if this is your first time tuning in. So there's a few things we want to talk about today. First thing is just kind of a general check-in as to what's happening with our lives right now, what we're doing, what's happening as regards our behavior in relation to the pandemic. There's some cultural trends we want to discuss. And then I have a kind of a special bonus article that I'm going to throw in here that I'm going to quiz you on at the end.
Okay? Oh la la!
So that's what's in store on today's episode.
Is this like when you think your dinner's over because you ordered the dessert and then the chef sends out some little extra chocolates?
What do you mean?
This is a little bonus
thing
you're going to quiz me
on. Because we didn't talk about it before, right?
Oh, okay, all right.
So yes, it's exactly like that. Except instead of chocolates, it could be ashes in your mouth.
It could be. Well, okay. I'm going to make sure my knowledge of artistic gymnastics scoring is fully ready to go.
Okay.
It's not that, is it?
So at this point in Seattle, we are fully vaccinated. Pretty much all of our friends are fully vaccinated at this point.
I am unaware of anyone in our circles that is not other than children under the age of 12.
Yeah. And as I mentioned in an earlier episode of Culturally Relevant, I think Seattle was one of the first major city that was able to achieve 70% having received at least one dose of the vaccine, is my understanding. And so the state also, quote unquote, fully reopened in the past couple weeks. What that means is like indoor dining with no restrictions. You can be maskless inside if you want to be and are fully vaccinated. And there are some restrictions on that, like doctor's offices and I think like public transit, major
schools,
major gathering places with like over X thousand people. Like, so there are still some restrictions, but like theoretically, things are like mostly back to quote unquote normal. And so I thought, how have you been experiencing this quote unquote full reopening?
Well, I think it's maybe like a, to be clear, what they're saying is you can go back to school at full capacity, but people will have to wear masks.
Yeah.
So it's largely around, it's less about capacity and spacing and ventilation and more around mask usage in certain settings.
Yeah. But in most other settings, like retail environments or restaurants or like the things that make up many people's daily existence, you are now allowed to go maskless if you are fully vaccinated.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to, I am a person who checks the King County COVID statistics.
King County's where Seattle is.
Literally daily. So it comes out Monday through Friday and between 3 and 5 p.m. Pacific. And I'm like at 3:01. That's not true. But I am literally daily checking it. And I just want to make sure that I'm, these statistics of what percentage of people are vaccinated are really confusing to compare because sometimes they mean all adults, sometimes they mean one shot, sometimes they, you know, but by whatever measure, I believe that at the end of this, Seattle and King County, which is much bigger than just Seattle, will be among the most vaccinated places in America. We are already at, I'm going to say, 78% of all the people who are eligible, who are 12 and up, have completed their vaccine series of two shots. And if I'm off, you know, by a couple percentage points, like, forgive me, but that is a really high number.
Yes.
So,
we should also say, though, that, like, it's been really, really difficult to get movement on that remaining 20x percent or so. Like, incentives have not worked, education campaigns have not worked. And so, the momentum has slowed, is what I'm saying. But yes, overall, it feels very safe out there in Seattle.
Well, I don't know if I agree that for me it feels safe, but it definitely feels very vaccinated.
Sure.
And
yeah,
so
we'll get to that later, yeah.
I think we really did earn, from my, you know, understanding, we really earned the right to reopen under these circumstances. By which I mean, scientists thought maybe it was about 70 to 80% for herd immunity, given that some percentage of people have already had COVID and will have some natural immunity. You know, I don't personally feel jubilant or anything, but it has been quite nice for it to feel like we're able to all breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief as a society. And what that looks like is when I go around, people are dining and shopping and, you know, doing all their regular stuff, going to movies. And what makes me feel so grateful, you know, I'm not trying to like speak ill of any other part of the country. I can only speak for like where I live. But people, a surprising number of people are still wearing masks. So when I go to the grocery store, I would say, you know, in the day after things, quote unquote, reopened, like 98% of people were still wearing masks. And now it's probably more like 50 or 60%. But when I am walking down the street, sometimes people are wearing masks, even outdoors. People are, you know, avoiding each other a little bit indoors. I feel like there's still some nod to some the fact that, like, there is still some risk for some people. If I wear a mask, I don't feel like I get looks. And that's really nice to feel like both we truly earned it through the vaccination and we also still are leaving space for it not to be quote unquote 100% over.
Well, in the past, when I have praised things like what you have said, either on this podcast or slash filmcast or whatever, I've gotten quite a bit of criticism from people being like, why are you happy that people are living in the past and behaving in ways that are scientifically unsound? That is some blowback I have received, right? So let me ask that question, right? Well, like, I mean, I have an answer to that, but like, theoretically, people don't have to wear masks, right? So why are you happy about that?
I didn't say that I wanted people to have to wear masks.
You just said you're like, but something you find reassuring is people continuing to wear masks and staying 6 feet apart and blah, blah. So why is that the case?
So, as I mentioned, I check the case counts every single day.
Yeah.
And King County has improved a lot with the vaccination, but you would think with a near 80% vaccination rate that our cases would be near zero. And they are most certainly not. In fact, they are on the uptick in the past few days. And they seem sort of stubbornly stuck in a certain range. And so what that means is there is still community transmission, or I think there is, that's the wrong term, but there is still transmission among some subset of people, most of whom are not vaccinated. However, when you walk into like a, you know, a melee in a grocery store, you have like no idea who's in there and who's vaccinated and who's not. It's not like a party where there are five people who you all know. And so I feel like it's a reasonable thing to do out of consideration for each other. It doesn't particularly cost me anything to wear a mask. It's not hard. There are children maybe, you know, around who are still capable of, who are not going to be vaccinated and can contract the disease more easily. And so I, when it's, it's like, if people are saying it's not scientifically sound, I'm not exactly sure what it is they're saying. Are they saying masks are proven to do nothing? Like, that's not the statement, right?
I definitely have gotten an email about that. But yeah, I mean, it's, but it's also that theoretically, like, you have, you, if you're vaccinated, you have nothing to fear, right? And as somebody, I, like, made a viral TikTok about this. And, like, a lot of people were like, well, if you're vaccinated, you have nothing to fear. So why do you give a shit? You know, like,
well, I mean, I think you're asking me for, like, a very 101 explanation. But basically, the vaccine is not 100% effective. I am not positive that I have the full protection of my two doses of Pfizer because I'm on immune suppressing drugs. And it hasn't been well studied, the interaction between those things. So really, when people are wearing a mask in the grocery store, I'm literally thinking, thank you for looking out for me, because if you are reducing your risk, I don't know if you're vaccinated or not, but like, you doing that does make it a little bit less likely that this trip is the one that's going to give me COVID, and I have very strong reasons to want to avoid it.
That's the thing that I think that, like, I wish I had made clearer, and that I don't think is talked about enough, is that there's a huge swath of the population that is on immunosuppressing drugs or for other reasons cannot be vaccinated, right? But that want to be, right? And therefore are still vulnerable. And it feels like certainly the CDC has just kind of like said, we're not really going to deal with those people.
Or, it's going to be like, you know, you have to take it on yourself to be a quasi-medical professional. You know, like, I have other friends that are on much more hardcore drugs that suppress their immune systems more, and they are taking antibody tests to figure out if they generate any response whatsoever from the vaccines. And there's, like, a huge program at Hopkins right now to try to, like, track these kinds of results and understand what effects, if any. But, like, all this science is, like, literally just being done fresh as we are all going through this together. So to me, to wear a mask for another 3, 6, 9 months while I wait for that science to be done, it feels like a very modest, I wouldn't even call it a sacrifice, like an additional effort in the scheme of the past 16 months, which at times has been harrowing.
I think, you know, to put what you're saying in a different way, I mean, one thing, one reaction I have when I see people continue to wear masks is basically it's a respect for the unknown, that there's still so much about this we don't yet know. And it's like, if wearing a mask make it even slightly safer, and you might as well just do it, I consider that a considerate gesture, a compassionate gesture. That's me personally, right?
Yeah. And I understand a mask is more about reducing outward transmission than reducing incoming, like, infection. But I wear a pretty good mask, and I do, you know, I don't, like, stick it under my chin or whatever. Like, I'm really, like, fitted around the nose. You know, like, my point is I am trying to wear it for my own protection. And I am just appreciative of anything that makes me feel like we're in that together as a community.
The second thing I wanted to say is that Seattle, one of the great things about Seattle that I think has actually helped us about, you know, around this whole situation, is that, like, people in general just don't give a crap about other people.
In Seattle?
In Seattle. Like, what I mean by that is, like, you know, I'll give you an example. Like, at the company I work for, and at the last two companies I worked for, it is strongly emphasized that the dress code is completely casual. Like, and they're like, no. And, like, in the notes, the interview notes, they're like, yeah, no, please trust us. Like, we're not just saying it's casual. Like, it actually is casual. If you show up in a suit and tie, you will look weird.
Right.
And people just generally don't care what you wear. Like, you can do whatever you want, basically.
Got it. So you're not saying people don't care about other people. You're saying people don't care what other people think.
Right. And to some extent also don't care about other people, but that's a whole other situation.
Oh, that's interesting. I think Seattle is actually very caring.
Yeah. They're polite. They're considerate. But that's different than, like, caring, in my opinion. So anyway, so I think that's really helped us, because it's been like, yeah, wear a mask, don't wear a mask. Like, I hear horror stories online and from people I know who are like, I mean, there's a whole contingent out there that I've seen, respected people whose opinion I respect or used to respect, who are, like, shaming people for wearing masks outdoors and things like that. And it's like, some people, it's easier for them mentally to, like, wear a mask and leave it on the entire time. More people have died of COVID in 2021 than in 2020. So it's like, this thing is not over yet. Anyway,
I guess my point is, like, overall, I have this weird feeling that it's like over asterisk.
It's over period asterisk is what you're saying?
Yeah. Like here locally for us, certainly not in other countries. We're in a moment, if part of the purpose of this recording, you know, is to kind of capture the feeling of different phases of the pandemic, it feels like it's like both celebratory and not.
Yeah. I think you and I have seen a return to many of the routines we used to have pre-COVID, specifically seeing people and seeing people in significantly sized gatherings of people who are fully vaccinated.
Well, let's talk about some of the good stuff that we've gotten to enjoy coming out of COVID. Because I have a feeling a lot of the things we're about to talk about through the rest of the episode are not necessarily chipper. We've gotten to see people more often. I personally felt really socially awkward, like my social skills were rusty/broken, and that I easily got socially exhausted the first few times I tried to see people. But I feel like I'm back to a fairly regular pace of seeing folks. And yeah, we even went to like two parties over the July 4th weekend. For us, those both happened to be like outdoor barbecues. So it'll be interesting to see if like all these behaviors hold up when it's indoors and more like the fall and winter. We'll see. But there are some things we haven't done yet, but you know, what we like indoor dining. But overall, it has been so nice to like reconnect with people. Yes, it takes a lot of time per person to like catch up on like, oh, how have 15 months been? Oh, your family member like totally passed away. Your other family member got married. You know, like all this life stuff has like occurred. And I have felt like out of touch with even like close friends. But what has been most reassuring to me is like seeing people and remembering like, oh yeah, I really like you. You know, there was a reason we were friends. I can feel that I don't want to call it magic, but you know, like there's like a chemistry here. I want more of this. And yeah, that's, I guess, why we were friends in the first place and why we both put in the effort and why we built the relationship. And that thing is still there, even though at times it has felt like we've been out of touch, like the warmth is still there.
Yeah. I think there is something to this idea of like, you know, I don't know what, I think people have had a huge diversity of experiences over the course of last year, but like for us, there were a few people we kept in touch with, but we didn't even really keep in touch with them that much. And I think you put it really well in an earlier episode of this podcast where you said, nobody's asking each other how they're doing because everyone knows how each other's doing. It's bad.
Yeah, totally.
And it's like, and I have my own shit I'm dealing with and I don't want to hear about your shit because it's going to make it harder for me to deal with my shit. And now that we can actually see each other again, now that things are like starting to return to normal, things are potentially not bad anymore. And we can actually talk about how we are doing. And so, yeah, it's been nice to see people again. And it really kind of makes you understand how much COVID took away from us over the course of the last 15 months or so. So, yeah, I mean, and, you know, my friend Adam Zaks was just talking about, you know, former guest of the podcast, just talking about reopening the Neptune Theater, a major concert venue in Seattle. And it went great last night. You know, people were really eager to get out again. So it really feels like things are starting to return, at least in Seattle.
Yeah, and that it has a certain rhythm. Like part of that rhythm is on weekends, I'm more likely to see people and see groups of people, you know. When I see people, they've seen other people, so I hear how people are doing via gossip. Like, that's a thing I didn't have access to over the last however many months. You know, I'm just going to say, we had this, like, delightful conversation with a rando. Like, we never talked to randos, like people we didn't know before. But when you go to a party, they have, you know, people, the host has friends and you haven't met all their friends necessarily. And like, we had this great conversation with this guy who was like going on about how he had somehow ended up with a TikTok feed where the For You page was very disproportionately featuring rodents. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I need to get off of rat TikTok. And David is like, I am the man for you. I have been sent to help you. And he shows the guy how to like
redo his algorithm, basically.
Yeah. And like, that guy was like so excited to meet you. And there's this like, you know, little sparks can fly when you have like totally like random, you know, bombardment of molecules against each other. I know I'm slightly mixing my chemistry metaphors there, but like that stuff didn't happen before. And so, you know, what we had was a handful of people we knew very, very, very well, maybe overly well. Like, maybe you're sick of hearing my voice during the pandemic, but like you get new ideas, thoughts, and like stimuli from, you know, mixing it up with people, which is why we have parties. And that's been lovely too. Like, it had not occurred to me, because I was so focused on seeing the people that I need to catch up with, that we might actually meet new people.
Yeah, indeed. One thing that's been happening too is, you know, I was really celebrating the fact that we wouldn't need to do handshakes anymore. We didn't need to do handshakes during the pandemic. And now that we're going to parties again, like, everyone's shaking hands again.
I've been so proud of you.
But not me.
You are like...
Not me.
I plan to make this awkward.
I am committed to basically never shaking a hand for the rest of my life. Like, that is a thing I'm going to live out. And unless it's like the CEO of Google or Amazon or whatever wants to, and Microsoft, Apple wants to meet you, you know.
Don't let those people infect you. They're not better than us.
I'm not letting them infect me. I'm just saying I would be very conscientious about washing my hands immediately afterwards.
Well, so you've gone for the like kind of elbow bump, right?
Yeah. So basically, here's how it goes. We go to a party and people are like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. And they reach out their hand. And I'm like, sorry, I'm doing elbow bumps. And then I'll offer my elbow. And they're generally very understanding. No one's looked askance at the elbow bump yet.
Is this a gender thing? I don't think I get offered a handshake very often.
I don't know. Maybe.
But I do feel like I'm a hugger.
Yes.
And it's going to be real hard for me. I don't mind doing an outdoor hug. You know, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
It's a brief contact, whatever.
I also don't mind a hug, by the way. And in fact, my understanding is the risk of a hug is very low. But here's what I'm going to say. Pre-COVID, people often pointed out that handshakes were extremely terrible vectors for transmission.
Yeah,
even before we ever had a pandemic.
I think Dr. Fauci has said he may never shake another hand.
Exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly correct. So,
yeah. I'm so impressed by this commitment you have to the, I'm not going to call it the bit, the value.
Uh-huh.
That you are holding, because uh-huh. I have this hypothesis that there's like an eerie sense of people like rushing back to all their old habits, right?
Yes.
And I have empathy for that, because those old habits we have for all of our lives, minus 15 months, 16 months. And then we had a whole different set of habits. And those, I mean, we kind of learned and got used to over time, but they also were awkward and took a lot of thought. And so I think there's almost like a, for me, I'll find myself forgetting, you know, oh, I'm in this situation. I'm supposed to put the mask when I go back on inside to go through the crowded lobby to do the whatever. You know, it just takes so much work to learn like a third way that I'll make mistakes. And so I'm hoping that all of us, myself included, can kind of learn better and new norms. But I think there is a bunch of like autopilot that's happening. And you know, I get it. I get that it's less distressing. The autopilot is less distressing than what we went through. And so like, maybe there's just a defaulting back to it. But, anyway, I hope to follow you. I hope to find some other things that I care about that much and to also be breaking the mold.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any expectation of that. If there's anything that the last year has shown us, it's that the only person whose values you can control and whose behavior you can control is yourselves.
I'm not saying I'm going to make handshakes my thing. I'm just saying,
concept of it.
I'm saying, why don't we have a COVID living room forever? You know, that was our garage. And maybe we will find ways to have...
To be clear, right, we basically used our garage as a space to host people because it was in the open air during COVID. And so you're thinking, as an example, you know, maybe we should make this permanent, right? Like,
yeah, and maybe not literally our garage because it's real, real bad down there in terms of clutter now. But... in the future, why don't we have, if we ever buy a different home, like maybe we could have a quasi-outdoor space that feels well-ventilated for the winter months where we have people over and it still is somewhat cozy. You know, like there's just a lot that I could value for us to bring forward. Yeah. I just have not put enough thought into it because I'm busy reconnecting with people.
I watched, right now as we're recording this, there's this thing called a Criterion sale going on, and the Criterion Collection discs are all on sale at I think Barnes & Noble and other places. And the other day I was on Amazon buying some stuff and I saw the Criterion sale and I just bought a bunch of random discs. I didn't even remember until they showed up.
Yeah,
I've been doing this thing called Amazon Day where you can get all your packages show up on one day, and so sometimes I'll just order random things throughout the week and they all show up on Saturday, and it feels like a little gift package to myself, like of little surprises that I didn't even remember.
Oh, wow. Like right. A gift from past Dave to present Dave.
Correct. That I don't even remember what it was. Anyway, I happened to order Wallace Shawn and Andrea Gregory's three films collection on Criterion. And one of the films is My Dinner with Andre. And that is a film that I have seen portions of, that I've seen parodies of, but I've never actually seen the whole thing from beginning to end. So I was like, I'm going to watch My Dinner with Andre. And it's basically the OG rambling 2-hour film podcast. It's basically just two dudes, chatting for a bunch of random things. Two playwrights.
Life, play director, art.
Yes.
Yeah.
Chatting about random stuff for 2 hours. People who love this movie will think I'm grossly underselling it, but I actually really like the movie. And I think that one of the things they discuss many, many topics, and like part of the pleasure of the movie is also seeing like how one person bringing up one thing has an impact on the other person bringing up one thing, which is obviously something we get in podcasts all the time. Now, this is before podcasts. This is before there was even an iPod. I don't know if you can conceive of that, but anyway, one of the things that was brought up was how he like the characters think that like many people go through life in a dreamlike state. Right, that like Andre's character references like this guy who would like if he was left-handed or if he was right-handed, he would use his left hand to do all of his like daily activities, because in doing so, in pursuing something different and pursuing sensation and like something memorable, only in that action can one truly live.
Sure. Right?
Because otherwise you're just going through this, you're going dreamlike through this trance and like living life without even really living. Right. And I think the movie and the conversation is extremely relevant for a wide variety of reasons. One of which is what you just brought up about people rushing back in. Like we all were on autopilot, many of us, not all of us. Some people were living life to the fullest, but like many of us were on autopilot, and the rhythms of our lives, the daily job, you know, the nightly classes or workouts or whatever routines provided structure to our lives, but they also, in the conception of one of the characters of this movie,
they're narcotizing, right?
Right. Correct. Exactly. Narcotizing. They rob us of true experience. And over time, that kind of sensation becomes so normalized that when it's gone, we crave it. And that I think some of that might have happened, right? Like that we are desperate some of us are desperate to go back to our earlier routines. That's certainly the feeling I've been getting when I talk to a lot of people. And I think it's just important to not forget the good things that have, as rare as they are and as intermittent as they have been, the good things that have, that we've learned and that have happened over the course of the last year and a half or so.
Well, I think what I'm really interested in is like a third set of things, which were neither pandemic adaptations nor the possible sleepwalking, although I think that's a harsh way to look at it, prior life, but like a third set of things, which is like, oh, but what if I let go of assumption A, then what would my life be like? What if I let go of assumption B, C, D, et cetera? Mm-hmm. Like what would at least the thought exercise prompt for me? I think we're seeing a number of people make career choices. A lot of businesses are being founded, you know, because of some of the responses to that answer around work.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of talk about how the pandemic has forced people to consider what their jobs have been.
But I think we probably want to talk about a little more. But before we get into it, I just want to round out by saying I think there is a quote-unquote rush back to Pilates class and, you know, things that were soothing and helpful, you know, and dining out because it was a source of joy and going on vacation because that was a thing that was positive. And it's partly like a source of relief from the intense negative feelings and hypervigilance of the pandemic. So I don't think it's like unreasonable to be rushing back. And I don't think that's exactly the same as falling into like a narcoleptic state. But I think it is...
Narcoleptic is not, yeah, but...
Or sorry, a narcotized state. Yeah. But the... I have a lot of empathy for all of us because none of us know how to feel better after having felt so bad for so long.
Yeah.
I think the things I've seen, the two big trends, or is people going to visit their families right away, you know, so there's a lot of quote unquote vacationing, but it's really like family visits, and then people quitting their jobs. So anyway, we're starting to talk about that.
But I think, I think that's a great point. And now I'm like, oh, I don't want to come across as callous, like that there were many things that like were in fact like legitimately psychologically helpful to us that were taken away from us. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't want to make it that, I don't want to make it seem like I feel like, well, you're wrong to want those things. But I do think that humans in general crave like habit and routine, and having been shocked out of that, we should reexamine, you know. And I've been saying this for many episodes, so like it's just a kind of a variation on that.
Yeah, like how we arrange our lives.
Right. So please don't take it in any way that like if, you know, exercise class or in-person therapy or anything like that was helpful to you. Like, I don't think like it's bad that we're turning to that. I think more, my remark was more targeted at like thoughtless ways in which we behaved before, which assumptions we can now question. Like, for example, shaking hands.
Yeah, or like the 30-second coughing in each other's faces that started each meeting. Oh, was that just my company?
What are you referring to? I don't know what that means.
Okay.
Well, I mean,
I can't believe that.
I was like, was that a ritual? Here's a thing. Another ritual, though, it's like blowing on candles. You know, that I'm curious about, because that's a weird thing that we used to do, and feels like we shouldn't do that anymore. You know, but I think that one's gonna be harder to kill than the handshake. Like, I'm going to raise less of a ruckus about the blowing on candles than the handshake. The handshake, I'm, like, committed to. The blowing on candles, whatever. You know, okay. A June 21st, 2021 Washington Post article is entitled, "Retail workers are quitting at record rates for higher paying work. My life isn't worth a dead-end job." Subheading, some 649,000 employees gave notice in April, the sector's largest one-month exodus in over 20 years, a reflection of pandemic-era strains and a strengthening job market, end quote. This article was great because I think it basically was about people in retail reconsidering their life choice, like basically saying like, I don't want to do retail anymore. Like the pay sucks, the benefits are terrible, and I need to deal with assholes all day. And it's not that they quit and then do nothing or go on unemployment. Many of them decide, hey, I'm going to go get that graduate degree, or I'm going to go into construction, or I'm going to start my own business, or do something else that like they find more rewarding, right? So that's one thing that's going on, is like many people, especially in the service industry, are quitting, and I don't blame them. But also a lot of people are getting burned out regardless of whether they're in the retail industry or not.
Well, I mean, I want to
greatly
disambiguate work that requires interaction face-to-face with a lot of strangers all day. So retail, certainly the hospitality industry has had a lot of trouble rehiring. So this is like restaurants and hotels. Uber drivers, there's like a shortage of people that want to drive. I mean, Lord, I do not want to drive Uber. You know, I would be really genuinely scared that in a week of Uber shifts, I would get assaulted by some really unreasonable person. You know, I think a lot of healthcare workers are also very burned out.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising to me that, you know, whatever benefits came from the perks of getting the discounts at the store, or the camaraderie in the food and beverage industry, or the what, like it's just kind of not quite feeling worth it right now. And that lots of people are going off and pursuing whatever other ideas they have, or waiting it out a little bit or whatever. And even at the end of the spectrum where people work from home, do not have to interact with a wide variety of strangers and their behaviors, and don't have to serve them, right? Which is like a really tough dynamic that we've seen throughout the pandemic in the United States, is that service workers are treated very much like they are servants, which they're not. You know, but even people that were able to have like white collar work from home jobs are themselves also burned out for different reasons. And I find all of that really interesting, that I'm curious, as different, my assumption is that over the next year or two, different countries will have vaccination campaigns and be able to somewhat sort of exit the set of rolling lockdowns and restrictions. And that as they do, there will be a big reckoning. Like, it felt like there was a big pause button for a bunch of us until the vaccines allowed more reopening in the United States. And that after the unpause, there's been an enormous amount of scramble and reassessment, but that was held at bay while people were just kind of keeping their head down and plowing through and doing what they needed to do, because we didn't know if it would be a year or 4 years or whatever. So all of that is to say, I think some of the trends we've seen in the early post-pandemic here have been echoed in other places that are also exiting the pandemic. And I'm not sure how much this like career stuff will happen elsewhere, but I find it striking that people, it seems broadly like work did not work for people in the past 15 to 16 months across such a huge variety of types of jobs and industries and career paths and pay levels. And I don't know if that's endemic to the United States or not.
Yeah. Just the concept of work, right? Where you go, you spend 45 to 60 minutes driving into an office, stay there for 9 hours, 45, 60 minutes back, a few minutes with your family and kids, you know, wolf down dinner, like, and then sleep, repeat all over again kind of thing.
I think I'm saying something different, which is during the pandemic, you didn't do that, right?
Yeah,
like you didn't
do
the drive part.
That's what I'm saying. Is like, yeah, like the totality of that package, or, you know, that being one version of it, right? But there's many different versions of work. Like people looked at that. They looked at that. Then that stopped happening, and they could reconceive of a different future where they didn't have to do that, or could do it in a different way. And they realized, I didn't like the way it was done before, right? Like there are all kinds of differences I want. Like, either I don't want that job, or I want the job, but I don't want to need to drive in every day, or I am okay driving in, but you know, any number of other changes. But I don't want to need to, like, interact with, like, you know, I don't want to, like, need to celebrate Susan's birthday on Tuesday, you know, in the lunchroom.
Oh, my God. The amount of forced socializing I had to do.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Is like, people realize, like...
I'm having flashbacks.
People realize, like, some part of the work equation was not working for them, basically. Right?
I'm saying something a little different. So I do think that what you're saying is part of the upshot, but that in the past 15 to 16 months, everyone had a shitty work experience, as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
So the actual pandemic work experience was bad. And it was bad because people were like,
oh,
you have to raise your children on the side and they have to go to virtual school. Well, we'll figure it out. But actually, your expectations at work have not dropped at all. So, like, we attempted to be more flexible, but it didn't work out because we're addicted to productivity in this country. And that's like one flavor of unreasonableness. And I think there were like 100. And I'm shocked at how consistently I think there is burnout and people really questioning not just, oh, do I want to get on a bus again for 60 minutes a day, but like, why is our society like this and why does it always have to feel like such a struggle?
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. In the Wall Street Journal, there's an article called Companies Target a New Market, the Stressed Out. Makers of goods from cars to cereal push products and marketing that aim to soothe pandemic-fueled consumer anxieties. What do you think of this? This article runs through like some things that are designed to aid with people getting completely burned out. One of them is the example it opens with is the Lincoln Nautilus, which is a car that apparently like does things like play soft chimes. And there is a special like lighting display called the Lincoln Embrace, rather dystopian-esque. According to the design director at Lincoln, called Kimal Kurik, the door opens and it really feels like a human being. So there's lots of like, it's so prevalent now that there are people who are focusing on making your car like a human being to welcome you into its soothing embrace. How does this make you feel?
It feels like, right diagnosis, wrong solution. Like, hey, I'm burned out and I can't take another day of being in this kind of meeting because I'm secretly screaming inside.
Mm-hmm.
Is really, not solved by, you know, products that have more lavender in them or a car that has a massage seat. I need something a lot bigger than that, aka to stop being at this job.
A lot more systemic than that.
Or to be at a job that would genuinely care about my 1 year outcome and not my like tomorrow outcome or my next week outcome.
Well, speaking of screaming inside, there's this article I read at The Guardian that I can't really get out of my head. It's by Francine Prose, and it's entitled, What is Causing Bursts of Outrage on Planes and Grocery Checkout Lines? And the article opens with this anecdote. Last week, a stranger threatened to beat up me and my husband in the checkout area of a grocery store. What set him off was that my husband, en route to return an unwanted item, had brushed past him. The man announced that he was going outside to wait for us and, screaming, snarling, and raising his fist, stared at us through the window. Was I surprised that a muscular guy in his 30s was threatening to punch out two grandparents? The woman behind the checkout counter wasn't. She said, stuff like this happens every few days. In fact, not long before, in another supermarket, another city, an elderly man raged and shouted at me, claiming that I was standing too close, and the cashier said, he comes in here and does that all the time. I thought of those incidents when I read that on June 14th, a man had shot and killed a Georgia supermarket cashier when she asked him to wear a mask. Violence is surging on airplanes as well. As Sarah Nelson, president of Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, recently said, we've never before seen aggression and violence on our planes like we have in the past 5 months. Just the other week, a flight attendant had two teeth knocked out by a violent passenger. End quote. So, the article kind of is mostly anecdotal, but it does certainly feel like there is more violence, and also like some stats back this up, that there's a lot of violent, like random acts of violence happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, so my understanding, although I am not a firsthand observer of this, is that as the UK has started to exit lockdown, there is a similar like surge of outburst anger slash violence in that country. So I would be tempted to partly chalk this up to the American predilection toward the old ultra-violence as a way to express one's feelings. But I think it is possible that we will see it in other places because it has been so stressful to be under lockdown. And for some percentage of people, like, anger is the place they go to, and it's going to find its way out. The other thing is, as I've reflected on that, you know, earlier in the spring, there was a series of attacks on Asian elders that were like videotaped. And I remember struggling for so many reasons. But one of them was I couldn't process what I was seeing because it wasn't my understanding of how violence typically works. You know, that violence is rarely like a random act against a totally random person without provocation that doesn't, like, it's more typical for it to escalate from like a verbal dispute, right, you know, over time, or people who knew each other before. And so it makes more sense to me if it's more broadly patternistic. Not to say like Asian people couldn't still be disproportionately the object of that kind of attack, but I do believe that people are really pissed off. I don't feel pissed off, really, to be honest, but I could believe some subset of people feel very oppressed. And, you know, a different article that I read talked about people going on vacation, but they're vacationing like it's a revenge trip, you know, like that they feel that they
owed were deprived
this, right. And they are going to get their beach towel even if they're out of beach towels right now, like, I am owed this experience. And I could imagine that mentality in which service levels are exactly as if the pandemic never happened, the supply chain as if the pandemic never happened, and what you think you are paying for is for people to be gracious to you and like to cater to your needs. Like, if that is not falling apart or happening, then you feel like the whole bargain of what you think you're paying for is falling apart. And so I sometimes think America has ridden this the customer is always right mentality far past its natural sort of breaking point. But I do think that while I have not personally encountered any of this behavior, I feel nervous about it.
Reading again from this article, one wonders where all this free-floating fury is coming from exactly. In our hurry to return to life as we knew it before 2020, some of us have begun to behave as if nothing unusual or disturbing had occurred. On Saturday nights in bars and restaurants, the massive collective traumas that our nation has just experienced, the pandemic, the January 6th Capitol insurrection, might almost seem like figments of our collective imagination. Though many still wear masks, the new normal looks, on the surface and in some neighborhoods, so much like the old normal that it's almost possible to forget that 600,000 Americans died, and that until a few months ago we were confined to our homes, blindsided by the warp speed at which reality had changed. End quote. Anyway, it goes on to say that, like, it's not that we want to, like, relive all this, but just Americans are very bad at grieving, I think, you know, and like...
Well, it also doesn't take that many people to be bad at it to have this impact, right? This could be 1% of people and that will be noticeable and terrible.
Yeah. And this is a thing that was brought up in my dinner with Andre as well, of how, like, people like to pretend as if nothing's wrong. Like, just in general in American society, right? Like, how's it going today? Every day I cry myself to sleep in a fetal position, but like, I'm not going to say that because I don't want to make people uncomfortable. So I just say it's great. It's fine. You know, at work, like, people do small talk at the beginnings of meetings. How's it going? I refuse to participate anymore because if I'm going to talk at all, it's going to be fucking real. Okay. I might not say anything, but if I'm going to say something, it's going to be real. And that actually happened recently. They're like, hey, what are your plans for the weekend? And I was like, everyone's like, oh, well, I'm going to this lake house. And I was like, how about you, David? I'm like, nothing. Existence is already extremely difficult, and I'd like to just do nothing for the weekend.
Wow. Big Tyler Durden energy there. Okay.
So anyway, my point being, I think people in America particularly are very like repressed in general, I think.
I don't think they're repressed. They're insincere, David. So
okay,
like...
Well, you know, tomato, tomato. I think it's the same thing.
I think it's... You know what? To be fair, I do think it's a mix of both, but compartmentalized.
Yeah,
maybe,
and then it basically
more
like
generous
it's basically
way to
put like
it.
Exploding in these like extremely unfortunate, regrettable ways.
You know, I will say, as a brief comparison,
uh-huh.
I've only lived in one other country, which was France,
uh-huh.
And people they do say "ça va," you know, "how's it going,"
yeah.
But they literally just mean. Hey, what's that? That's like a head nod. You know, that's not a real conversation opener. No one in France asked me, how was I doing for the entire 3 months that I lived there?
Yeah.
And my French teacher back at Duke had warned me, if anyone asks you in France how you really are, they are asking because they care and they mean it. And they're about to have a 20-minute conversation with you about how you are really doing. And they come to America and people are always like, how are you doing? How's it going?
Right.
How are you feeling? And then they find people don't actually want the answer.
Right.
And they're like, what the hell is this? This is so like fake feeling
exactly.
In comparison. So
I'm already there.
Move to France.
I'm already there.
Here's my solution for you.
Yeah. All right. Final topic. This one's the bonus topic. Okay.
Oh, this is the quiz.
Yeah. It's not really a quiz.
Oh, I wanted a quiz.
Sorry. Okay. So Viet Tan Nguyen,
yeah.
Or Win, wrote this article at newyorktimes.com about advice for artists whose parents want them to be engineers. So if you don't know who Viet Tan Nguyen is, he is the author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel The Sympathizer and its sequel The Committed. He's professor of English, American Studies, and Comparative Literature at the University of Southern California. So... one of the most accomplished writers alive today, okay, whose parents still wish he had been an engineer to some degree. And, you know, as Asian immigrants, you and me are both Asian immigrants, he had this advice. He had like, it's kind of like a top 10 list almost of advice, or top 5 list of advice. And I thought I'd just read you some of these pieces of it, because he goes on speaking tours and people are like, I want to be a writer. Like, what should I say to my parent? You know, like he gets, and so he decided to write this. Okay. And so this is like completely not pandemic related. This is just a completely kind of like little fun thing. I thought I'd read you some of these pieces of advice and you just tell me whether you think it's good advice or not.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay. Okay. So, piece of advice number one, just go for it. Which is basically this. He describes this person named Yoku Shimizu, who quit her job in corporate public relations, left Japan, and moved to the U.S. to become an artist. She explained her decision this way: your parents will pass away eventually, and you have to live your life for yourself. So just go for it. Just do it. That's piece of advice number one. How do you feel about that? For someone who wants to be an engineer. Or sorry, wants to be a poet, and their parents are telling them to be an engineer.
I agree with Ms. Shimizu's
yep.
Advice, but I do not agree with just do it blanket statement.
Okay. Getting your parents to tolerate your choices may be enough. Basically...
That's the second piece of advice.
So basically it's like...
Oh, they may not get their approval,
correct,
but you'll
correct.
Get their
They're
tolerance.
Not going to like be like thrilled with it. He's just saying if they tolerate it, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I feel okay. Okay, this one is more controversial. Truthfulness is overrated. So then he says, I have often lied to my parents in words or by omission. For example, my father is a devout Catholic who goes to church every day and I'm an atheist. But when I come home to visit, I take him to church and say nothing about what I believe.
Complicated. Because Catholicism... I think there are a lot of lapsed Catholics who are Catholic sort of culturally.
Mm-hmm.
That one's tricky. in that specific situation, truthfulness is overrated. I mean, I don't know what to say about that. I think that there is an impact to the depth of your relationship with anyone you're not fully truthful with. And so if you're saying, I am willing to sacrifice some of the...
Right.
And that's a choice many people make. It's a totally valid choice.
He says here, our parents have probably lied to us too, which I'm like, I know inherently that's true, but I didn't really think about it until he wrote it there.
I just think that a common frame between your family and my nuclear family is that there is a language difference where we can't speak the same language with like the same level of fluency. We cannot express incredibly complicated concepts in their native language. There is obviously a cultural difference. There's a difference in time. 30 or 40 years has passed since they were our age, you know, or at least 20. And I think like across all of those differences, sometimes it is just too hard to try to, you would not succeed at quote unquote being truthful anyway. So the withholding or the omission is to just gloss over it's to accept that there's no way to actually be understood.
Mm-hmm.
And that I do have a lot of empathy for, and I think is a really common immigrant issue.
Yeah. Okay. There's a couple more, but let's just do one last one here. Assert your independence respectfully. Parents, especially immigrant parents, have often worked incredibly hard to create opportunities for their children. Still, some parents have to learn that their children's lives are not theirs, no matter what they sacrificed. Respect is the key, says Kavita Das, a writer. It comes down to helping them understand that we are not throwing away all their hard work, but honoring their hard work, because it allowed us to pursue our dreams. Said someone else, it might sound aggressive to say one shouldn't ask for permission, but it's kinder not to expect a blessing from people who have no experience and only anxieties about your moonshot dreams. And then, you know, Mr. Nguyen says, now that I'm a parent myself, I like to think I would allow my son to be anything he wants, such as writer, artist, or musician. What about professional video game player, my wife asked. Reader, I hesitated. I still do. But I know I will have to let him go and trust that he'll make the right choices for himself if we have properly prepared him.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's subsumed in one of these many pieces of advice, but like almost all of... If you are an Asian immigrant to the United States, chances are very high that your parents grew up in poverty and through war were displaced. So they are fighting for you to have basic survival, like is often the overriding mentality. And, you know, if you have won a Pulitzer Prize as a writer, I think it's like a lot easier to feel like, hey, that writing path can work out for people versus like I was scrambling to, you know, get away from the enemy bombardment or whatever. And so I have, of course, people should do what's right for themselves in the present time and not always be solving for the past generation's traumas. And I think you can be really respectful of how your parents got to that mindset. So I'm not sure I agreed or disagreed on that final one.
All right. Well, still pretty cool article, huh?
Yeah.
I think that advice is valuable overall. Okay, let's wrap up. You have some further thoughts to wrap us up on?
Well, I do want to say we are going to go on vacation for the first time. We're going to do some of the higher risk post-COVID activities soon. We're going to go do indoor dining for a birthday party at a small restaurant. And we're also going to get on a plane next week for the first time. I'm a little nervous based on all these, like, you know, articles I'm reading about what that situation is going to feel like on the plane. But we are going to get to meet a new addition to your family, which is really exciting.
My nephew, yeah.
Every time we get a photo or a video of this young person whose gender is public.
Gender is public, not name, though.
Yeah. Or gender as assigned at birth or whatever. I don't, yeah, anyway, yeah. The baby. David immediately watches it or looks at it and he gets all gooey and he's like, oh, he's so cute. And so I just am really excited to see you meet him. And of course, I'm excited to meet him myself. And that is an interesting trip. We will literally be flying with your parents and then seeing your brother and sister-in-law and the baby. And it's just going to be really lovely, I think, to have that together time. I've had some version of that with my family, but my family's all local, so I haven't felt as, you know, disconnected from it. And they were going on a truly proper vacation to a vacation destination in about a month. And that's like really surreal and hard to wrap my mind around. I'm so excited. It is not a revenge vacation where I feel like I'm owed. And if anything, I want to be extra patient and gracious with like the service staff. And I'm imagining they're seeing some like wild behavior on the regular. But I am just so grateful to have that opportunity, you know, soon. And I think that might be the most surreal thing for me coming out into the post-pandemic era, but I'm also really looking forward to it. And so I'm hoping that for the rest of folks, I feel like every other part of the world has had, you know, such wildly different experiences. Like some people have had like almost no lockdown and then now suddenly they're in a lockdown, or, you know, differing vaccine advice and certainly differing vaccine availability.
Right, like countries like India seem to have beat it or been doing pretty well and then experienced a terrible crisis. Taiwan handled it incredibly well, but then recently started relaxing restrictions and then there was a huge surge. Like, and these things all happened at like different times, basically.
I think that Taiwan thing's a bit more complicated, but yes, every country has its own like version of the story. I was on a Zoom happy hour recently with people who were from the U.S., but also Australia and Hong Kong and Taiwan, and everyone's past 16 months has been differing levels of difficult at different times. Not to say it's all been equal, but, you know, I both feel like really grateful and really sad at the same time that different places are having to continue to work through this at an unknown exit time. The thing that has been most helpful to my mental health has been having a pathway to like a time and day by which I would probably be vaccinated. And that meaning there's a time and day by which I could probably go off and do X, Y, or Z, like meet your nephew. And that has felt, having future things to look forward to has restored some of my sense of like linear time, if that makes sense.
Understood.
So, yeah. Looking forward to the travel.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. Hope this has helped. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts. And this podcast was powered by Simplecast at simplecast.com. Check them out for a great podcast management and analytics solution. We'll be back next week with a new episode of Culturally Relevant. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening.